All right, been looking forward to this interview since I had the chance to book it not too long ago. Ex-U.S. Navy Captain Brett Crozier joins us right now. Commanding officer of aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt, fired from his command during the pandemic. Captain Crozier, good morning. Welcome to Talk 107.3. How are you?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. We're going to talk a little bit about surf when you can in just a bit, but I got to start off with rewinding back the clock. Let's talk about being fired from your command during the pandemic. What happened?
Sure. Yeah, this is March of 2020. I think when, like the rest of the world, we were figuring out what COVID meant, what kind of risk there was. This is before things like masks and testing, and even certainly well before vaccines. So I was commanding officer of the ship. We had unfortunately had some sailors that had come in contact with COVID through one way or the other. And if anyone ever spent time on a Navy ship or a aircraft carrier specifically, it's not a great place to have a virus like that running around. So we did what we could. We pulled in pier side there in Guam. We were trying to get sailors off the ship that had tested positive. We were trying to go through the normal quarantine protocol. But again, kind of writing the book as we went because it was all pretty new to everybody. And I was, I want to make sure Claire was, I understood the rest of the Navy and the government and all of the Department of Defense was trying to figure this out as well. We had a pretty good team on board, and we were finding that as we were watching the cases spread exponentially in terms of the numbers, and again, with a crew of 5,000, that meant you quickly got into the thousands, and the risk that incurred then potentially to loss of life sailors got to a point that was unacceptable. And as CEO of a ship, you're ultimately accountable, and I knew that my number one priority as a leader was always to take care of my sailors. So end of the day, I wrote an email asking for assistance, kind of a rock in the boat moment. It wasn't an email that was crafted in haste or out of anger. It was with a lot of deliberation and a lot of analysis, and sent it to a small number, 10 or less of folks that were in my chain of command that I knew would take action. I knew I was rocking the boat a little bit because I knew that that's not the normal protocol and how you do that, but I couldn't wait the normal duration of decision-making that would take place. So sent the email to get assistance, accepted the fact that, I didn't ask for help earlier in the situation, accepted the fact that I was ultimately accountable no matter what. But I got the help we needed. We broke the logjam. We got assistance to the sailors. We accelerated things, or maybe were already in motion, and we got them the help, got them off the ship, and ultimately did what I hoped, which was to minimize the risk to the crew. It didn't come without some kind of fallout, and certainly politically outside the Navy, the administration at the time wasn't happy with those efforts, or at least the attention that it brought, particularly once the email leaked to the press. And ultimately, I was fired a couple of days later and was given a rousing send-off, though, by the crew, who I think appreciated the fact that I stuck my neck out for them and were kind of letting me know that they were going to continue to fight on even after I departed the ship. And then I went on to serve another 2 years in the Navy. I wasn't reinstated, but I had a great job in the Navy. I continued to fly fighters and then ultimately just retired this last year and had a chance to write a book kind of reflecting on really my entire career, not just the COVID TR incident, but all the great things I learned from the men and women I was lucky enough to serve with.
Well, I'm sure Surf When You Can covers a lot of the incident itself, but was there no room for grace? You said March of 2020. This was the beginning of it all, man. We didn't have the level of intel that we have now. We didn't have the level of, any kind of evidence of what the pandemic was at the time.
Yeah, I think that, we were learning as we were going. I think that within the Navy, to be honest, I think they appreciated the fact that I was highlighting some specific things that they had not yet addressed, understanding how easily it was transmitted, some of the shortcomings we had in terms of equipment to deal with it. And so within the Navy, I think initially the reaction was, yeah, we appreciate the CO bringing this to our attention or bringing it to a higher level. Mm-hmm. I think it was external to the Navy. It was the acting secretary of the Navy at the time that made the decision to fire me. And again, he's making his decision based on what he thinks is best for the Navy. I don't think there was any ill will or anything personal about it. I just think it disagreed with my priorities, which again came down to taking care of the sailors that I had been entrusted to take care of.
You said it's a rousing send-off, so obviously from within, very well received. And you sound pretty well adjusted and accepting of the way things played out.
Yeah, one of the other things I wrote the book is to make sure people knew I have no bitterness. It was a great job. I was when I was CEO of the aircraft carrier, I could fly a helicopter one day, I could fly a fighter the next day, I could drive the ship through the South China Sea with Chinese Navy ships chasing us around. I loved it. So if there's any sadness, it was that I can keep doing the job that I love doing, but I wasn't bitter, and I don't think anybody had any personal vendetta against me. I think they just, you know, maybe when it all came down to it, they were trying to do what was best for the Navy. But I stand by the fact that, you know, as a leader, I'm always going to try to take care of the folks that that work for me. I think that's what leaders do. I think managers manage programs, money, things. I think leaders manage people. They lead people. They inspire them. They build that teamwork. So for me, at the end of the day, it was a sacrifice I was willing to make.
This obviously walks us up to Surf When You Can, Lessons in Life, Loyalty, and Leadership. Talk to me a little bit about the motivation to put pen to paper.
Yeah, I think they say, you know, written out is thought out. And you know, as I retired from the military, I had learned so many incredible lessons. And I was just honored to serve with all the men and women and the people that I did over the 30 years. So I tried to write it in a way that shared all those stories and gave credit to all the men and women I served with. And so it's not really a memoir as much as just a leadership journey, you know, where kind of learned as I went through the military from the people I served with. You know, I believe leadership can be taught. I think you can experience things that make you a better leader. And I wanted to share, you know, what I did over the 30 years because I felt, you know, I was blessed to serve as long as I did and I enjoyed everything about it. And I thought there's some skills, leadership skills in there that are beyond just a ship or Navy or military. I think I try to write in a way that is transferable to anybody, whether you work at a nonprofit, whether you work on the corporate side, or you're just talking about how you go around day to day. So there's military stories in there, but I think I do the lessons, things like, you know, pull like a Clydesdale or play small ball. Those are relatable, I think, to a much wider audience, because I think for me, they help me not just in the military, but even outside as well.
The book is called Surf When You Can, but literally the title of every single chapter could have been the name of the book. Going through it, it's broken down story by story or chapter by chapter. How did you come up with Surf When You Can as the title?
Well, I think into the effort of one of my goals when I retired was to surf more. I think that was often the way I started my day before I would put some pen to paper, as they say, before I started working again at the nonprofit I'm at. But I do like to surf. I think, you know, surfing means a lot of things. I think it's a life-work balance. I think it's also a way to step back and think as a leader. And I do like surfing. If there's, you know, I think at the end of your life, you're never going to look back and wish you worked harder or made more money. You're probably going to wish you spent more time with your family, you traveled more, and if you're a surfer, you're going to wish you surfed more. So I just wanted to make sure that was what resonated. Maybe the juxtaposition from a military leadership book that I titled it that way, but I also think, you know, for anybody out there, whatever your surfing is, whether that's hiking, running, working out, reading, doesn't matter. I think, you know, everyone needs to work on a good life-work balance.
I'm just saying, if the title of the book was Focus on the Closest Alligator, I would be just as dialed in.
Yeah, that's another good chapter title. I agree.
We're talking with Brett Crozier, an ex-U.S. Navy captain, now the author of Surf When You Can. Brett, I got to ask you a little bit about what folks are going to learn when they read this book. Or let me re-ask it this way. How should folks approach your book?
I think with an open mind. I wrote it in a way that would appeal to a much broader audience than those that served in the military. I think, you know, 95% of society has never served in the military. So to that end, I think it's important for people to understand what folks in the military are doing, the sacrifices they make. But I also wanted to relate some of the day-to-day personal interaction stuff that I think can make you stronger, even if you're not in the military. And that's why those chapter titles are applicable. That's why I talk about things like surfing and baseball and teamwork, because I think those are applicable no matter what you're doing, whether you sit on a boardroom, you're an executive suite, you know, you're working in a factory, you name it. I think there's a lot of things there that relate to anybody, and I hope that they find something in there that appeals to them, that makes them enjoy their day more.
The book reads very stream of consciousness. Did it just flow that way with the writing, or was this a little more arduous of a task?
No, I definitely, we're probably kind of iteration 2000 or something, because... just, you know, for those that write for a living, and there's many people that are better writers than I am, I think it's a process, right? And some people maybe can sit down and write at first pass. I certainly took a lot of editing along the way. I think there's a chance to kind of think it through, see how you can connect them all. But in the end of the day, I want it to flow smoothly as it builds towards the end, obviously, with the TR story. But majority of this is not about the TR in any way. It's just about the things I learned, the adventures I had all over the world. And I thought they were fun to share.
The lessons learned in this book are unbelievably valuable, but also valuable, and I wanted to get your kind of this juxtaposition, the discipline to implement those lessons. How would you weigh those two sides together?
Well, I think it's easy for folks to always think of discipline in the military, right, and think about, you know, that's what it takes to be successful. I think discipline's important. When you're in high-risk operations, it does take discipline. I think as a leader, though, you have to be more creative. You have to find a way to work with a team. So, you know, I think, you know, reading this book, I hope folks find things that appeal to them in different ways based on whether I'm talking about teamwork or the importance of, you know, small ball, you know, which is, again, is about, you know, not always trying to hit the home run. I think those are important creative ways to look at leadership and life that maybe people don't think about when they think about the military perspective. Because I think discipline is important personally, but I don't think that's the way you lead. You don't lead with discipline. You lead with kindness. You lead with your heart. You lead with, you know, trying to inspire people. And that's what I hope people take away from that, from the book, at least.
I guess let me re-ask the question. The discipline, to me, is in being true to who you are. That's what rings through each one of these lessons, and that's the part that you can easily lose when, you know, you take your focus off the ball.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, for me at least, after having been able to serve as long as I did and go through all the experiences I did, it comes with some confidence, too, that, you know, you should lead in a way that makes sense for you, and I think you should lead in a way that's true to you. Don't try to be someone you're not. Don't try to be a hard ass if you're not. Just lead in a way that you can relate to people, whether you're, you know, whether it's one-on-one as a person or whether it's where, you know, you're a leader and they're someone that works for you. I think you just got to be true to yourself, and I hopefully kind of remind people of that. I think it's that important personal element of leadership that is important. And if that's the discipline people need to take out of it, it should be that. Be true to yourself. Lead honestly. Lead in a genuine fashion, and I think you'll get better results.
Yeah, the book is available now. It's called Surf When You Can, Lessons in Life, Loyalty, and Leadership. He is ex-U.S. Navy Captain Brett Crozier. Thanks for a couple minutes.
Thanks, Brian.